Yeah, I'm going to step off the limb now. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Oh, he's such a sweetie.
He's got more women than he could shake a stick at.
Oh, well, he's very popular. They all adore him. He's sick.
He made it happen.
Ladies and gentlemen, August Donnelly.
Good day or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are, and welcome once again to Full Frontal, right here on CHRW 94.9 FM. I am August Donnelly. We have a great show for you today, and there's all kinds of different news to get to and the like, so let's get to it. First off, the biggest news of all here on Full Frontal, I have the distinct privilege of welcoming, for the first time, my protege, the newfound Full Frontal intern, Barbara. Barb will be joining me on the show going forward, hopefully more often than not, to ensure that we keep things fresh and also to ensure that I don't damage any of the equipment. So ladies and gentlemen, may I present my assistant, the lovely Barbara.
Hi, August. How you doing?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I appreciate you asking. Barb, let me tell you, if you like music and a woman of words, then tonight's show is right up your alley. The lovely and the talented Sarah Westbrook is on the show tonight.
Very nice.
So, in the news, did you hear that Charlton Heston passed away over the weekend?
Yeah, I just read that online this morning, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's true. The 84-year-old Oscar-winning actor died at his home in Beverly Hills. Now, despite this great loss to the Hollywood community, and indeed the world of cinema, in other celebrity news, the New Kids on the Block are reuniting.
Oh, God.
They made the announcement on the Today Show last week that they will be releasing a new album, and they have already planned an international tour, if you can believe it. So, with their ages ranging from 37 to 41 years of age, they aren't new, and they certainly aren't kids anymore. In fact, given their middle-age status, they're all candidates for colon cancer screening, their annual prostate exams, and quite possibly early-onset erectile dysfunction.
So, pretty much the only thing that's hanging tough is their skin.
Exactly. Couple that with previous monetary woes, and you've got yourself a real cold shower. Let me tell you, Barb, there's truly nothing sexier than a bankrupt, flaccid, middle-aged pop singer. Oh, God.
August, let me interrupt. Didn't you have a New Kids on the Block doll?
I absolutely did not.
Didn't you have a New Kids on the Block tape?
I did.
And poster.
No.
And t-shirt.
No. No poster, no t-shirt, no doll. Yes, I will admit that way back in the day, in 1991 or 90, or I think it was 90, that their big album, Step by Step, that was it. When that came out, I'm not going to lie, I had a cousin who was older than me at the time go to HMV or wherever it was and buy the album for me. And it's sad but true, I have to admit. In other news, on the positive side of the sound spectrum, this is really interesting, actually. I was looking at the Wikipedia website, and they have little news links, you know what I'm talking about, all
mm-hmm.
the time. Yep. And for years and years now, well, for well over a century, it's been believed by scientists that the oldest known recording of a human voice was the famous recording that Thomas Edison made of him singing the opening line to Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Okay.
Which dated back to 1878, 77 or 78, so we're talking 130 years now. However, French scientists have found and essentially proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, although I really hope that now that I'm talking about this, it doesn't prove to be a great hoax like the Piltdown Man or something like that, but they've got a recording of an unknown female voice on a phonautograph, which is essentially a voice similar to the technology Edison used, mm-hmm. spoken into a cone-shaped resonance instrument.
A pylon.
Basically, exactly. Speaking into a pylon, speaking into something, yeah, shaped like a traffic pylon, and the voice resonates, vibrating a stylus at the end, which creates like a wave pattern or a scratch in like a plate or a wax cylinder like Edison did. Well, anyway, this is from 1860, so this predates Edison by almost 20 years. Anyway, it's an unknown French woman singing the French folk song Au Clair de la Lune. And
it's French.
Yeah, it's a French woman singing a French song. Can you imagine?
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Bob's your uncle.
Robert's your mother's brother.
Exactly. So right now, I think it'd be to the benefit of myself, yourself, and the audience to hear a little clip of this this recording dating back nearly 150 years. This is a French, unknown French woman singing the French folk song Au Clair de la Lune. Now, keep in mind, I have to preface, this is not going to be digital media quality. But anyway, give this a listen. So, what do you think of that?
That was about the creepiest thing I have ever heard.
No kidding.
I think I see dead people.
Seriously, how would you like to come home to a darkened house and hear that?
I wouldn't, but it still beats New Kids on the Block.
True. True. But that's pretty cool, huh? I thought that was
pretty
interesting. One more thing in the news that caught my eye of recent, of late... was that British Columbia students, according to the Canadian press, are getting healthier. However, the incidence of sexually transmitted disease is on the rise. Yeah, exactly. The report out of Vancouver states, and I quote, this is directly from the Canadian press itself, a new report says the overall health of BC students is improving, but too many people are getting fat and many are passing around infections through sex. The report released by Provincial Health Officer Dr. Perry Kendall says that fewer students are smoking and that alcohol and pot use have dropped since 1998, so in the last decade.
Okay.
But while fewer teens report having sex, there's an increased incidence of sexually transmitted infections, and also there are too many overweight or obese students, and more students are suffering from the anxiety disorders associated with cyberbullying. Here's the thing. I guess if you're living in the greater Vancouver region, you have to be careful when you tell your friend they look great about, you know, how much weight they've lost and congratulating them. You know, you feel like saying, you know, Bob, you look great. You've lost 50 pounds. What's your secret? Well, really, with the anxiety disorders I suffer from, the sleepless nights, and the fact that I'm suffering from wasting syndrome associated with the contraction of syphilis, I can eat whatever I want. Exactly. I don't know. I thought it was funny that students are getting healthier, but they're obese, they have sexually transmitted diseases, and they're suffering from anxiety disorders.
You know, but August, I've actually spent a lot of time out west. It's a great place to be.
Not too much time, I hope.
Enough.
Oh, God. Yeah. Folks, it's listener email time. Now, remember, I'm trying to read one positive and one negative email message during each broadcast. So, the first email message comes to us from Marty in London. And Marty says, I enjoy your show, man. We listen to it in my shop on Monday nights. And
what kind of shop?
I don't know. I didn't ask Marty. I didn't respond back. I should have asked
him.
Pet
shop, barbershop.
Sex shop. Could have been all kinds of shops.
Was that guy calling from BC?
No, from London. London, Ontario.
London, Ontario. Okay.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't be related to the other story there.
No, I don't think so. Now, the second email message comes all the way from England. An individual from Newcastle who calls themselves or refers to themselves as World War I veteran asks, August, what happened to my last email message and why didn't you read it during your show? Well, I can truthfully say that I never received an email message from this individual previous to the one I just read, and that I'm truly astounded that a World War I veteran, who would now have to be at least 105 years old, is A, still alive, and B, computer literate. So, kudos to you, my fossil-like friend.
I don't know if you really want to be tearing up the vets on the air there, August.
Well, you know, I'm not tearing up the vets, because the veterans, as you're intimating, they definitely laid down their lives left, right, and center to allow jerks like me to do what I do. And there's no doubt about it. As I've mentioned on previous shows, actually I get quite PO'd when veterans are dragged through the mud, or you know, people do disgusting things like desecrate cenotaphs, etc. But I think I'm safe in criticizing this individual, because the odds of him being a surviving World War I veteran, being that there's only about a dozen left on the face of the earth, as you may recall, Canada, as of last year, one of the remaining two passed away. God rest his soul. There's only one left in this great nation of 32 million people. I think it's safe to say that the guy isn't really a World War I veteran, and why, out of all internet handles, he would pick that is completely beyond me. Anyway, as mentioned, my guest tonight is an acclaimed and award-winning singer and motivational speaker. She's performed at venues such as the Air Canada Centre and the Sky Dome before thousands of screaming fans, and here's a brief taste of her most recent album to hit the shelves, entitled Freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sarah Westbrook. Awesome stuff.
That was very nice.
I thought so too. This is why she's on the show. Well, I recently had a chance to sit down with Sarah in a crowded cafe, and here's how it went down. So Sarah, how's it going? What's new and exciting in your world?
Actually, today is a really great day. Looking out at the sun, it feels pretty good.
This is true.
And there's always something new. My biggest thing right now is I'm in the studio working on my newest album. My last album, released in 2007, was mm-hmm. Freedom, and yep. it's an acoustic album. Loving it. However, now I'm ready to take that up the next level
okay.
to full production. And I've done a full production album before. But I really wanted to take some of the songs from Freedom, as well as the new songs that I've been writing, and really give them that punch. My style for who I am right now. It's interesting because I think CDs always give you a glimpse of where you're at then. So that was great for me for 2007, and now for 2008, this is me now. And that's what's going to be coming out in the summer, and I'm really, really looking forward to it because I almost want to say it's got that acoustic, you know, organic grounding, but it's like acoustic, organic grounding meets a little bit of 80s modern pop. So it's unique but not unrecognizable.
Well, that's good though, because it's unique enough in the sense that it is sort of its own genre. It's not just top 40 garbage. not that I hate to, you know, I hate to call that garbage, but let's face it, so much of it on the radio nowadays is, like you say, unrecognizable because it all just kind of blends together. That's just my opinion. You are the musician, the singer, the songwriter, the motivational speaker. Can you tell the listeners, though, about your beginnings, where you grew up, etc.? What got you into the whole entertainment industry in the first place?
When I was three, actually, I told my mom I'm going to be a singer. And it's interesting because looking back at videos, I was actually looking back at some videos about 6 months ago with my mom, and I couldn't believe watching them. There's this little 2.5-year-old girl singing these songs I just made up and, you know, dancing around the floor, and I couldn't really remember how young it really started. So at three, I told my mom I'm going to be a singer. There was no one I watched or saw and thought, oh, I want to be like them. It's just born knowing intuitively that's what I wanted to do. At eight, I started taking lessons. At 11, I started as a paid performer working at a dinner theater in Harrysville. And from there, just really progressing. At the age of 18, I recorded my first album, and I also got into the schools with motivational singing, songwriting, and speaking. Now, actually, I shouldn't say songwriting, because I didn't, and in the schools, I didn't really sing my own songs. I mainly did covers at the time, because, I don't know, I guess it was just being afraid, you know, to really be that vulnerable. And some of my songs, since I write melodies and lyrics, I didn't have music to them. So it was, you know, those two things put together, and it was, I loved singing other people's songs at the times. And then it got to the point where that there was a missing. You know, I wasn't really saying what I wanted to say.
Right.
Because I'm limited, because I'm singing what other people have written. And so now when I am back in the schools with my newest programs that I developed this year, I'm doing all my own material. Everything's my own and my own message. And my message, no matter what I'm speaking about, no matter what I'm singing about, I want people to know that they have the power to make positive choices that can impact their life in a very powerful way, no matter what they're going through. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, when I'm singing or writing, if I'm even talking about a downtime, I want to shed light on there's light at the end of the tunnel, on hope, a lesson learned. So
okay.
To be as vulnerable as possible and share as much as I can about who I am, my struggles, my triumphs, is very important to me. Because I think that's how you make the biggest connection with people, is by sharing and being vulnerable. And to tell you the truth, sometimes it's nerve-wracking, especially to be in front of a whole bunch of high school students. Because I know what it's like to be in high school. I was there not too long ago. You're always judging yourself because you're trying to figure out who you are. Who am I compared to this person? And so when you're internally judging, you're going to externally judge too. So I thought, oh, I never want to be the person that's up there at these assemblies, you know, when I was in high school sitting in the crowd. And now for me, it's like, feel the fear and do it anyway. Because when I get up there and I become vulnerable and I do my show, you leave with something you didn't come with. Almost like an Anthony Robbins meets John Mayer, you know, show. And then I get home and I see all the emails from these young people that are saying, wow, you really made a difference and this is how. Or this song really meant this to me in my life because my parents separated too. That's what spurs me on. It's like, okay, that it is making a difference. Regardless of whether I'm nervous or whether I'm scared, that has to go in the back burner because this is really going to make a difference, not just for me, but for other people.
And in relation to you know, difficult things that you've gone through, I think any good artist has drawn from their hardship and their difficult periods.
Definitely.
No, things have improved. You've enjoyed some success and some accolades and some fame. You've performed at venues like the ACC and the Rogers Center, which obviously was formerly the Sky Dome. How did those things go down for you?
Awesome. You know, the ACC was great, and so was the Sky Dome, just because they're massive.
Yeah.
You know, and so all I'm doing is I'm visualizing, okay, I can't wait till this is my concert, and this is my show, and I'm packing all these people in. But I'm very honored to have been there and sang the anthems. I mean, I love both anthems. I love the Canadian one, obviously, because I'm Canadian. And the American one, and really making them your own. But you know what? There's so much pressure on the anthems. I'd rather sing my own song. Because even if someone's in the crowd and they don't know the anthem, they know if you made a mistake.
That's so true.
Oh, she messed that one up.
You foul up one word in the Star Spangled Banner,
that's
and
right.
People are not impressed.
No.
And it's funny because, sorry to interrupt, but even Canadians will ride you about it. Like, you know, you foul up the American National Anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, and you'll have people that would normally sing O Canada being Canadian jumping all over you. Like, what are you talking about, the Rockets' red hair? What? You
know, it's, oh, yeah. They know it.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they don't know it, they know it, and they know when you've made a mistake. So it's much more nerve-wracking. But, it was a wonderful experience.
That's awesome. Now, just recently, June 2007, you won a London Music Award for the most popular singer and songwriter.
Yes.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. That was a wonderful, wonderful experience. Just to be nominated for it and to be up against really talented local people. You know, like Shelley Raston. You know, she's more country. We're in a different genre. But wonderful following that she has. And for me to win it, you know, I was just excited to be nominated for it.
Right.
So it was very much an honor. And actually, I've been nominated again this year.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting for me as well.
Could be a repeat or a two-peat for you?
I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
Well, that's definitely a fantastic situation. I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Now, you're working on an album right now, but the newest one that's already out in the stores is Freedom.
Yes.
And it was released in 07 last year.
That's right.
And tell us a bit about that album.
Yes, it's mainly an acoustic album.
Okay.
And like I said, I really love this album. It really takes a moment of, it's almost like taking a picture. You know, it takes a moment of my life then, you know, in 2007. And, but in 2008, I'm still really, really loving it. A year later, it's about, I called it Freedom because that's how I felt writing the album. Just really free to write what I want to write, really play with my melodies, play with my lyrics. But again, still a lesson learned in each song. Still wanting people to walk away with something they didn't come with when they hear the song. Just a different
right.
perspective on a situation.
That's awesome. Something I have to ask you about, I was going over your website, and it's a great website. It's sarawestbrook.com. That's S-A-R-A Westbrook.com. So everybody that's listening, check that out. And you're also on MySpace?
Oh, definitely.
MySpace.com/Sarah Westbrook. Something I noticed on the website that, again, this is all about you giving back to the community, giving back to, you know, the fortunate situations that you've been blessed with. Tell us, or the listeners, myself and whoever's listening out there, about Brenda Hunham.
Brenda Hunham is a woman who was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease at 53. And my grandfather had Alzheimer's disease. By the time I knew it was Alzheimer's disease, he was too far gone. And actually,
right.
my grandfather and I had a great relationship, and then near the end, he turned into someone who, he got really aggressive with me
yeah.
and tried to choke me and punch me, and I...
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it got pretty aggressive, and so I actually couldn't visit him because he called me a different name. I was someone different to him, like someone from his past. And so meeting Brenda, actually my mom met her first because my mom was doing a lot of work with Alzheimer's Society, and she had seen Brenda speak because
mm-hmm.
Brenda went around and spoke about what it was like to be diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
And my mom thought, wow, this woman is so candid. I'd love to talk to her and have her give me some insight so it can help me with the support groups that I'm forming.
Right.
So my mom asked her if they could speak, and Brenda said yes, and away they went. They spoke a couple months later, and my mom asked her one last question before they were done speaking, and she said, "Do you have anything you have left to do before this disease completely takes over?" And Brenda said, "Actually, I do. I've been struggling to write letters to my kids, who at the time were in their early 20s. I want them to know that I love them, so in the late stages when I can no longer say it, these letters can remind them." And my mom was like, "Well, how about a video? I know on the sad days with my dad, I would have loved to have gone home and had a video that would have said, 'Hi, Linda, it's Dad. Just want to let you know I love you, and today was the disease, not you.'"
Mm-hmm.
And Brenda was like, "No, that's not what I had in mind. Actually, the reason why I can't write these letters is because I've always loved music, and I really want a song." And my mom, believing in everything happens for a reason, said, "I didn't meet you for you to help me in these support groups. I met you because my daughter's a singer-songwriter, and she'll write you this song." So my mom drove home, and at this time, my dad had just died about 6 months before.
Okay.
And I had given up singing when my
right.
dad passed away. I stopped my motivational programs. I felt like I had nothing left to give. I was like, I'm probably not that good. I'm not maybe that even good of a singer or writer. And I'm in this different mindset. My mom comes blasting in the door. She's like, Sarah, quickly, I have something so exciting to tell you." And so, you know, I wander to the top of the stairs thinking, "Oh gosh, she's so annoying." And she's like, "I met this woman today and she's got Alzheimer's disease and you can write a song about Alzheimer's." And I'm like, "Great." I thought there was a sale on or something.
Yeah.
And so I didn't hear about it for that one day. I heard about it for the next week after that.
Okay.
Long story short, I ended up meeting with her. Wonderful connection. Writing down tons of notes. I met with two writers I was working with vaguely working with at the time, because like I said, I wasn't really doing much with music at this point because I felt like
right.
I had nothing left to give. Andrew Ng and Matthew Tischler, and together the three of us wrote this song, and it wasn't a little song, it was a huge song. And we presented it to Brenda, and then we presented it actually on World Alzheimer's Day, September 21st. Brenda said, "You know, this song isn't just for me, it's for the world." We've been traveling everywhere. We've gone to Greece, we've gone to Ireland, we leave for Romania in May. This project has blown my mind. We've sold over 8,000 copies of this single.
Yeah.
So it's considered a gold in Canada. And we've raised so much money, so much awareness, and so much healing to a disease that really seems hopeless. We've given hope to. And Brenda's amazing. She still speaks. She still travels with us. And it's giving a new face to early onset, because we always think of late.
Exactly.
We always say the last stage in Alzheimer's disease. And so this song really got me out of my rut. I'm back in the schools.
Yeah.
Three CDs later. You know, it's amazing how when you're really supposed to do something, how it comes around and it keeps hitting you in the face until you do it.
That's fantastic. And the song itself, for the sake of those that are interested, is called One More Memory, if I'm not mistaken. One More Memory. And I'm very proud of you that you've been over to Ireland, the great land of my heritage, being a proud Irishman. And you got to give it up to my people over there the next time you're back and tell them August Donnelly sent you. And
it was great.
Much love to the old side. It's a beautiful country, isn't it? It's fantastic.
And I always said, you know, I want people to want me to sing enough they're willing to fly me places. And who knew it would be Greece and Ireland?
Now
Romania. I'm really...
It's a pretty good score, yeah. Chill out in the British Isles, chill out in the Mediterranean, you know, just do my thing, do what I love.
Yeah.
And call it a day.
Just one last thing that I just want to talk about really briefly is the motivational house concerts that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because you've probably heard about house concerts. I know they're really big in the States. So what I've been doing in these last few months is really taking off is... Young people will have me at their house, or any age group for that matter, I've done adults as well, and I'll put on a concert right in their house, and also in between talk about life tools. It's really great because, I was saying before, when I had to go to different workshops, they were so far away, and this is right in your home. So it's a lot of fun.
It doesn't get much more convenient than that. Now, for things like that, for house parties, for information, whatever else, what's the best way for your fans and supporters to get in touch with you? Is it through your website, through sarahwestbrook.com?
Yes.
And there's an email link on that website?
Yes, and then I'll go right to management and then the booking.
And then eventually it'll trickle its way down to you.
And also my MySpace is where I always put my newest work.
And that, again, is myspace.com/Sarah Westbrook?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, again, Sarah, thank you very much for being here. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
It's a pleasure speaking with you, too. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, I am all out of time, but join me again in 2 weeks right here on 94.9 CHRW. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments for the show or myself, good, bad, or ridiculous, email me at august@chrwradio.com or visit my official website at www.augustdonnelly.com. Until next time, be who you are wherever you might find yourself, because without you, you're lost.